Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to today's podcast. In today's segment, we have the honor and the privilege of interviewing Mr. Erkan Zeng. He is the CEO and the founder of a very leading top-notch cybersecurity firm called Jupiter One, based out of North Carolina. Erkan, thanks for your time this afternoon. Let's go ahead and get started, please.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you, Robbie, for having me.
And thank you again for your time. Erkan, we looked up your LinkedIn profile, and I got to be honest with you, I'm actually very impressed with it, all the stuff that you've done. I mean, you work for some really high-level companies, doing a lot of high-level cybersecurity work. You got some certifications, patents. Tell us more about that and, like, your background and really what motivated you to get you started into cybersecurity.
Yeah, sure, sounds good. You're too kind with your words. I was kind of lucky to get started in cybersecurity early on, when I was studying computer science and engineering at NC State University. And when I was doing my graduate study, I developed an network anomaly detection system together with my advisor and professor at NC State. So that's kind of like my beginning of getting into the cybersecurity space. Did a bunch of things after that, right? So you mentioned on my LinkedIn profile, so I did a bunch of work at IBM Security and Fidelity Investments, Lifomic, and now Jupiter One.
Okay, well, tell me some about your certs and your patents. I'm kind of interested in those two. Can you kind of tell us what you've done, what you accomplished in that regard?
Yeah, the certifications are interesting. I think, early on, and this goes back to, 20 or so years ago, when I was kind of getting started in the tech space and especially the security space, one of the things that people do a lot is get industry certifications, right? So there was one period of time while I was working at my first job at Cisco, I went out and got a bunch of certifications as much as I can. And at the time, there weren't really a lot of security-specific ones. And, at that time, cybersecurity is basically limited to firewalls and antivirus software. Right? So that's about it. But there were a lot of, network management type of certificates and, system admin type of certificates from Cisco, mm-hmm. Microsoft, and you name it. So I've started there and got a bunch of those. And there were times that I was going and doing an exam every 2 weeks, and this reminded me of a kind of funny story. And there was one day I walked into the test center, and the guy at the test center practically knew me just by face already, since I've been there so much, and he didn't even need to check my ID, and he asked me the question. Afterwards, and after I took the test, and he said, hey Erkan, what exactly do you do? I said, well, I work at Cisco full-time right now as a software engineer, and I'm also finishing my master's degree at NC State. And he said, no way, you're not serious, you're lying to me. I think you're a professional full-time test taker. So that was pretty funny. So I was taking so many exam tests at a time. And then later on, there's more cybersecurity-related certifications. So I got into things like Security Plus and CISSP and Certified CISO, those type of certs later on in my career. I think overall, they did help a lot, right? So, I don't think that is necessarily the only path to get started in cybersecurity, but definitely one way.
Okay. Well, tell us about your patents. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that, like what you've done and how they are, what makes them unique and innovative and how they relate to cybersecurity?
Yeah, of course. And I think this, a lot of my kind of thinking of cybersecurity, I tend to relate that to the physical and almost the biological world that we live in, right? So, In a lot of senses, I think that there are so much similarity between the two, and so a lot of my patterns are, some of them are related to sort of I get ideas on, you know, for example, right? So how do you do, you know, treatments for diseases, right? So when you see a doctor, and you know, how do people treat how do doctors treat diseases, and also, you know, when you manage your kind of personal life and you know, credit scores and things like that, right? So how does an individual's credit gets rated, right? So I sort of draw inspiration from you know, the physical and biological world, and then try to apply that to the digital and the cybersecurity space. So, you know, some of my top patterns were around those, right? So there was one, I think this one is, you know, still being reviewed. It's around, you know, how to apply a scoring mechanism similar to, you know, credit scores to application security.
Okay, excellent. Now, tell us how you got started with JupyterOne. Now, I'm assuming that this is a company that you founded and created. How did you get started in that, and kind of where is it off to today?
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. And we started as a subsidiary product company of a parent company called Lifomic about 2.5 years ago. So there's quite a story there as well. So I joined Lifomic about a little over 3 years ago as the CISO. And Lifomic at the time was also a startup and pretty fresh, and, you know, less than 10 people when I first joined. And I had this idea, and I discussed with the founder and CEO, Dr. Dan Brown of Lifomic. And basically, there's a lot that we can do in the cybersecurity space. And, you know, I really wanted to, you know, apply my experiences that I've had, right, accumulated from my IBM and Fidelity days, and start building a product to do security right, modern technology companies. And he liked the idea as well. So I built a prototype, and then, you know, he decided to fund it. And, you know, we incubated the product as part of the Lifomic's internal operations and starting to commercialize it, and created a subsidiary product LLC company, and, you know, got a bunch of customer excited about the technology. And, you know, a lot of early adopters, customers have started rolling that out in their own operations. You know, we've had customers like Reddit and Databricks and HashiCorp and Auth0 and Adapar and so on, right? So a lot of these are pretty well-known technology leaders in the industry. And fast forward to now, right, so a little over 2 years, 2 years after we first started, you know, we actually just completed a spin-out of JupyterOne to be an independent company and received our first round of venture funding. So we are kind of graduated from the incubation program of Lifomic, and now we're continuing to grow. It's really an exciting time.
Congratulations. That's definitely a key milestone. My hat's off to you on that. Now, just a side question.
Yeah.
How did you get the name JupyterOne? What prompted you to name that for a cybersecurity company?
That's a great question. So, you know, when you hear the name, right, JupyterOne, it really has nothing to do necessarily with security, just the name itself. And that was part of the idea, right? So there are actually so many security products and companies today in the industry, probably 7,000-8,000 of them, I would guess. Every year you go to RSA, right, you see all of them on the exhibit floor. It's really overwhelming. And most of them, I wouldn't say it all, but, you know, most of them has, you know, pretty standard kind of security-related names, you know, something that has risk or secure or threat or shield or, you know, some of those in their names, right?
So when
we were naming JupyterOne, and this is actually, you know, one of the things I told myself to not do is to be like another security company. And that's also how we designed JupyterOne, is also not to be just another security company. So we want the name to kind of reflect that. And we don't want any kind of mundane name that, you know, once you see it, you feel like, oh, that's just another security company. So, you know, how this came about, right? And, you know, we were actually on a retreat ourselves with the Jupiter One team and the Lipomic team at, you know, Dr. Don Brown's house at Park City, Utah. And it was winter, and we were doing some skiing at Park City. And the highest peak, or the chairlift, or, you know, for the ski resort at Park City, was named Jupiter. So we said, hey, we want to achieve great heights, right, with this product and this company. Ooh. So let's name it Jupiter. And, you know, Jupiter by itself didn't sound kind of catchy enough, and so we added one after it, right? So there are other great product and brands like Capital One. You know, we feel like, yeah, you know, Jupiter One sounds pretty nice. And that's how they came about.
Yeah, actually, on a spinoff from that, Jupiter is actually, I think, the largest planet in the solar system. It's a gas giant, so
it is.
That sucks.
Yeah,
but it's got like 13-14 moons. It's kind of like its own solar system. Yeah, so that's awesome. That's an awesome name.
That's right.
Cool. Well, let's not focus.
Yeah, and I think, you know, part of that. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I was gonna say, you know, part of that is, you know, that what we're building and what we also see. And this goes to a bit of the genesis of Jupiter One as a product, and what I believe as a security professional is, you know, navigating the cybersecurity space. It feels almost like just navigating in space. You know, it's very easy to get lost, and there's so much going on, and there's so much unknown. And you know, and what we're setting out to do, and what we're achieving as a product, is helping people navigate that unknown and that vast amount of complexity and so on and so forth, and having that visibility that you previously didn't have before. So that's actually another reason that we picked, or we felt like a space related theme for its name is appropriate.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, okay, well, tell us more about your company. Like, what are your products, services? We're going to be touching here on this pretty soon in the next question more specifically, but can you just give us an overview of your company?
Sure.
And your product? Your, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Jupiter One as a company is a SaaS product company, software as a service. And, you know, we build this platform in the cloud. It's cloud native, and but it tailors towards very much kind of forward-looking and cloud and digital organizations. You know, by digital organizations, I don't just mean the, you know, the unicorn startups of the world. It's not just that, because a lot of the organizations and enterprises today, even the legacy traditional Fortune 1000 organizations, are becoming digital, right? So I went through this firsthand myself at Fidelity, right? So we went through massive digital transformation so that large legacy organizations can compete with the disruptors, you know, in the technology industry, right? Everything today is basically based on technology. You know, you have fintech, you have medtech, you have, you know, biotech, you know, all of those are based on technology. So in most cases, right, so organizations are trying to become digital, they're trying to go to cloud, adopt, you know, public cloud resources. And from a engineering development standpoint, you know, people are trying to be agile and, you know, adopt principles like Scrum or infrastructure as code. And all of those are great. But at the end of the day, what that creates is this, you know, unparalleled challenge when it comes to security and visibility, especially visibility, right? Because we all know that, you know, you cannot protect what you can see. Right. So that's what, you know, Jupiter One has set out to do, is to provide this platform. And we look at this as the underpinning of all good security programs or compliance programs, or even broader for IT governance, for that matter. And what that is it really boils down to, you know, asset discovery, asset visibility, and knowing yourself and knowing what you have.
Okay, excellent. Now, do you primarily make use of, you know, when you talk about cloud infrastructure, do you primarily make use of the AWS and Microsoft Azure?
So, So JupyterOne as a product ourselves, we are hosted in AWS, right? Like many startups are. And but we support for our customers visibilities into their AWS environments and Microsoft Azure and Google Cloud environments as well. So the use cases using JupyterOne is not limited to AWS, even though that we ourselves are in the AWS technology stack.
Okay, excellent. Now, so let's do a deep dive now into what you've alluded to, asset discovery. What is asset discovery? Can you please elaborate on that and how is it relevant to people, you know, inside security, not in security?
Yeah, so in cybersecurity or in, you know, IT governance and compliance, for that matter, and a lot of that is based on, you know, understanding what you have, right, as far as the resource goes. So, you know, to understand that, first we have to think of you know, what is an asset, right? So an asset can mean a lot of different things to different people. So if you think about configuration management database or, you know, asset management and inventory systems from years ago or maybe decades ago, and this is not new, right? So we've had this for a while for IT asset management type of software. Now, what that started was, you know, let's track things like a laptop or a workstation or a server or a network equipment and so on and so forth, the physical pieces of assets. And then later on, that evolved into, you know, let's track anything that has an IP address associated with the resource. And let's track all the users or anything that the users have access to. But today, in the age of cloud, it's a lot more granular and a lot more complicated than that, right? It's not just physical assets and it's not just resources with an IP address. So an asset could be anything that is software defined. It could be, you know, a storage bucket. So that's like S3 in Amazon in AWS. It could be a virtual instance. It could be a container. It could be an access policy. It could be an access role. It could be a user account. It could be temporary credentials. It could be a Slack channel, right? Or, you know, users in Slack. Or it could be a code repo in a Git repository or, you know, pull requests to a code repo and user endpoints and agents on the endpoints and so on and so forth. So you name it. Anything that you can think of that is software defined. So I qualify assets with these kind of two. One, it is software defined. And second, it is part of your digital operation, right? Because anything that is part of your digital operation has an impact to the operation itself. So any change to that asset has this impact. So that's what I kind of qualify as assets, right? So that's what JupyterOne as a platform will discover and inventory and manage those assets.
Okay, excellent. Now, why is it important to take inventory of these assets? What can you learn from them?
So think of this, right? So think of, let me take a step back a little bit, right? So I look at cybersecurity as I mentioned earlier before, as sort of how do doctors treat, you know, or prevent illness, right? So to some extent. Now, how do you do that, right? So you do that by understanding the human body, right? Or from a public health standpoint, you do that by understanding the population, right? And the conditions of the disease or the situations and so on and so forth. And a great analogy of that is actually in today's environment, right? So we had this COVID pandemic, and in order to combat that, you know, we need to do contact tracing, right? So we need to understand your demographic, right? We need to understand the population, you know, who is who and who lives where and so on and so forth, right? So that is the equivalent in the digital space, right? In order to kind of combat issues or either attacks or you look at it in the form of an illness almost to an organization or or a outside invasion to an organization, right? So you have to know yourself and the situation in order to prevent or protect yourself, right? So that's why this is so important, because otherwise you're shooting in the dark, right? You don't know the actions that you're taking, whether that's meaningful or not, or, you know, whether that is the most prioritized, you know, that it can be. Now, another example I'll give, right, so is in the, this is important in how Jupiter One approaches asset inventory and asset discovery. It's not just what you have and how they're configured, but even more importantly is how they are related to each other, right? So how are these dots connected in your digital operations? So I equate that, again, to sort of the contact tracing in today's world, right? So, you know, having visibility to, just say you're the mayor of New York City, right? So or you're the head of the public health for New York, and that's almost like, you know, you're the CISO for your organization. And, you know, in order to know that, you know, COVID is or is not, or how is it impacting your city, kind of like, you know, how a zero day or an attack is impacting your organization. Now, in the physical world, you have to know the contact tracing. You have to know where people are, who have they been in contact with, what's their kind of circles of friends, and, you know, where have they been, and, you know, all of that good stuff, right? So all of that comes from the relationships and the connections. The same thing goes in the cyber space, in the digital world. So how things are configured is only one level, the base level of visibility. What you have to know beyond that is how one resource is connected to the other, you know, how users can access these resources. And for users that can access these resources, you know, what are the additional contexts associated with these users, right? So what are their user endpoint devices, how their endpoint is configured, you know, compared to what access they have in production and what systems they have in production, and what might be the vulnerabilities on those versus what might be the vulnerabilities or activities on these user devices, and so on and so forth. So connecting those dots is sort of the ultimate visibility that you can have to truly effectively operate security and governance in your digital space.
Okay, excellent. Now, what kind of risks do you take on by not monitoring your assets on a real-time basis? They're like 24/7/365 basis.
Yeah, and I think significant, right, is that really there's two things. One is there will be a lot of unknowns, because today, especially with cloud and software-defined resources, things can change at moment's notice. And what you know before, that might be the situation that, you know, you might thought that you're safe and everything is configured correctly, may no longer be the case, you know, a minute from now or an hour from now. You know, it depends on how often your software changes, right? So, or your DevOps process, you know, deploy into. And without up-to-date visibility, the decision-making that you've applied before, and you're trying to apply that to an environment that you no longer know, you know, what's happening, will introduce significant risk, right? So having that knowledge is going to reduce that risk greatly. Just to know what's exposed, what's not, you know, if there's anything that's now giving you new exposures that you didn't have before. And the second part will be time. Right, so how much time that you spend dealing with alerts and vulnerabilities and incidents, you know, having that visibility will greatly reduce the amount of time that you have to spend on each event or each case.
Okay. Now, who should be responsible for overseeing this process? Is it the CIO, the CISO, or the IT security manager? Who should overtake this in your own view?
Yeah, I think the whole asset visibility and the use cases on top of the asset configurations are, I see that starting to kind of converge, right? So there's both a use case for the CIOs and the IT management teams, you know, from just a traditional IT service management standpoint, and just keeping track of everything standpoint, there's certainly a number of use cases there. On the other hand, right, the CISOs have a bunch of use cases as well, is things like vulnerability management, things like, you know, threat detection, threat hunting, and incident response, and not to mention, you know, compliance, right, on a quarterly or annual basis. So all these are use cases for actually both teams. So, and that's why, you know, asset discovery and asset management is actually the underpinning, right? So for the entire IT operations, including the CIO's function as well as the CISO's function.
Okay. Now, how does asset discovery tie into other security and governance operations in an organization? And then in that regard, does it have any bearing with the GDPR or the CCPA or any other data privacy acts like that?
Yes, absolutely. So in both of those regulations, right, so GDPR and CCPA, even though they're heavily focused on privacy, there is a security practice to it. And there is, data geolocation requirements to it as well. So having that level of visibility environment configuration, from an infrastructure configuration standpoint, can help address a lot of that requirement. And in both cases, the privacy frameworks also have security requirements in there, data security requirements in there as well, like encryption and secure by design for, you know, application development and, change process and things like that, right? So all of those are sort of incorporated into those frameworks. So a lot of the answers comes from your configuration data. Right, so the way I look at compliance is actually not that different to security operations, and this was actually one of the questions I've been asking myself a lot lately, or after I've been in the security industry for a while, is that we used to say a lot, we still say that compliance doesn't equal security and vice versa. Right, so I've been questioning myself a lot recently, or as I was building Jupyter One, why is that the case? What the auditors are asking a lot of times, that data comes from your digital operations, your processes, your configurations, and your assets. So if we can combine and have an automated way to aggregate and gather that information, we can answer those compliance questions, right, regardless of the compliance framework. It could be HIPAA, it could be PCI, it could be GDPR, whatever the case may be.
Now, is it possible to do asset discovery without a tool? Can this process be automated?
It is not possible in sort of today's digital world, right? It is possible before, right? So you can use a spreadsheet, which is still a tool, but not an automated tool. You can use a manual process and keep track of the resources that you had, and it was possible before because most of the assets were relatively static. They don't change as often. So today in the cloud, things are software defined. So you can have a three bucket that was here today and no longer here tomorrow and back again the day after, right? So those type of things, and that's just, one example, right? So there are other more ephemeral type of resources like containers and short-lived instances or serverless functions and things like that. Even more so, they change on a very frequent basis. It is practically impossible for people to keep track of those on a manual basis.
Wow. Okay. Now let's go back to your company, Jupyter One. How do you help clients with this asset discovery process?
Yeah, so it's via automation, right? So we wrote a lot of the connectors or integrations, we call them, between the Jupyter One platform to the infrastructure environment that an organization may have, right? So the infrastructure environment could be a cloud environment like AWS or Microsoft Azure and so on. And there are other environments like, GitHub or hosting code repos, and endpoint devices and agents and vulnerability scanners, are all of those in today's kind of landscape, most of those have an API associated, right? So we've pre-built a bunch of integrations to popular services and providers so that we can proactively and automatically discover those resources, you know, simply by the users who configure these integrations and give us credentials or configure credentials to their JupyterOne account, and we will go out to the target environment and discover those resources. And alternatively, you know, JupyterOne is a platform itself, right? So we integrate everything from API as well. So users can leverage JupyterOne's API to push data into the platform using JSON or CSV or just directly API calls.
Okay. Now, as you mentioned before, you know, there are thousands of, you know, of cybersecurity vendors out there. What separates actually your company and even your product line from the rest of the pack out there? Why should a client come say, hey, to ERCOM, I want to work with you guys? What do you tell them? What's your market? What's your biggest market differentiator in that regard?
Yeah, I think this has to do with our approach to the data, right? So we use a graph data model behind the scenes. And this goes back to my previous examples of connecting the dots and contact tracing and things like that. And I think that is the key part of our technology and what we offer is we not only will let people know and show them what are the dots, right, in your digital space, but more importantly, how the dots are connected.
Okay. Now, do you have any customer success stories that you'd like to share with us, any client testimonials?
Yeah, of course. And, you know, one of our biggest customer is Databricks, and they've been a fairly early adopter and a great partner of us. And their VP of security, Caleb Seaman, and he said, and this is on our website, and we've got a photo of him on our website as well, that you know, Databricks is using JupyterOne as the foundation to almost everything they do in cybersecurity. And they've used JupyterOne as a required tool for incident response. So any kind of asset-related questions they have, they just come to JupyterOne, write a query, and do a search, and they can, in most cases, get immediate context and get immediate details, and that help them make fast decisions that otherwise would take hours to figure out. Right? So that's a huge time saving. And then, of course, there's automations that they configure on top of it, right, using that data. Once they discover some unknowns and they want to make sure that they get alerted the next time something similar happens, right? So those can be configured using a query in JupyterOne and set up an automated alert so that they get notified the next time.
And
another one
that
I can share would be...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, another customer I can share is Reddit. And they've been a very early adopter since you know, close to 2 years now that we've had Reddit as a customer, and keep in mind that JupyterOne itself is only 2.5 years old, so they've started very early with us, and their use case is vulnerability management, right? So the CISO of Reddit, Sean Callett, and I actually gave a joint talk at RSA earlier this year to talk about the vulnerability use cases. And the key thing there, right, so having, you know, a lot of people think about vulnerability management as I got a bunch of scanners and I run scans and I get findings and that's about it, right? But the difficult part of vulnerability management isn't getting the findings and scannings, but rather what do you do with it, right? So you get so many of them and you have to prioritize and you have to identify the resource owners and get a people to remediate, right? Whoever can actually do something about those, fixing those vulnerabilities. So that's how they leverage JupyterOne, is to help them quickly associate and correlate those vulnerability findings to the right resources and then to the right resource owners so that they can use a more of an automated way to identify who are responsible or who are the best people who can help fix this, right? And you know, rather than previously it was just through emails and meetings.
Okay, excellent. Now, do you offer any free trials or any free risk assessments for your prospects or new to be onboard customers before they actually make a purchase decision?
Yes, definitely. And we try to, as a vendor, we try to be, you know, very transparent, and we try to put our best foot forward from the very beginning. So we offer a 30-day free trial. You can just sign up. And you don't have to put in a credit card, and there's no risk associated with it. And, you know, that every account is fully segregated to that customer themselves. And our internal teams don't even have to have access to those data, right? So it's a complete risk-free trial for 30 days. You know, most vendors don't offer a trial or a much shorter trial.
Excellent. Now, let's kind of segue now into the cybersecurity threat landscape in general. And I'll ask you a few questions as to what your thoughts are on these topics. You know, I mean, the cybersecurity threat landscape knows has been always ever evolving. And, you know, I think it's exploded even more now with the COVID-19 pandemic. We've seen a lot of new things happening, new threat variants coming out. You know, we've heard of the Zoom bombing. There's, you know, the heisting of domain names and so forth.
Yeah.
What do you think about the remote workforce and, like, what are some of the security issues with that? And do your employees work remotely? And how have you kind of addressed their security needs or security concerns?
Yeah. So I think, well, for us, to begin with, right? So we have set up from the very beginning to be a very remote-friendly workforce. So we do not rely on, you know, being together at a office and be on the office network and so on and so forth, right? So there's technologies that we leverage to collaborate, like Zoom and Slack and shared documents and, you know, collaborations of code and ideas and all of those can be done remotely. Now, from a security standpoint, and this is also how we've set up as well, you know, we, from the very beginning, set up to be a very decentralized organization from a security management standpoint, with only one exception, right? The exception is the core infrastructure and the production environment, which is in our cloud, is fully protected, and we actually have a kind of quote-unquote virtually air-gapped environment in our production environment. So we actually have a ACM published paper around that. And by design, we reduce a lot of risk in that sort of what Google calls Beyond Corp and the industry calls zero trust type of infrastructure model. And I think for many legacy organizations, they haven't started that way, right? So they started with everybody come to the office, and there's, you know, protection for the networks when you're at the office, and therefore there's a significant amount of trust for the users and the devices on the network, and so on and so forth, right? So once you get off, then you don't get access to certain resources, but if you are on, then many of the resources are exposed to anybody on the network. So that was the legacy design. It worked fine for a period of time, but especially in the age or in the phase of this pandemic and people are getting to be more remote, I think this is forcing a much needed change to adopt more of a Beyond Corp / zero trust security model. Right? I saw it the other day on LinkedIn, a funny post that had a multiple choice question, and the question was, who drove your organization's digital transformation? And the choices were the CEO, the CIO, the CISO, or COVID-19. And the pre-selected one was, of course, COVID-19. Right. So I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Okay. Okay. Now, the Internet of Things, that's another hot button topic now, you know, and I find it kind of scary to have everything all connected together in the virtual and physical worlds. You know, this increased level of interconnectivity just simply increases the attack surface for the cyber attacker. I don't have a smart home. I don't have a smart car, but what are your thoughts on the IoT? Do you have like a smart home or anything like that? Or
I do. Yeah. I like those gadgets and things. I'm an early adopter, so to that extent, I'm not kind of so much of a paranoid security person that you often see. But I do think there is a risk, right? So there is a significant increase in attack surface to all of those, and not just security, but also privacy, right? So because everything is so connected, and the vulnerability of those devices can impact the security and privacy of each individual user or mass number of consumers, you know, when something, you know, bad happens, right? When some vulnerability was being exploited, right? We've seen some of those happen, right? So we've seen, you know, potential bad guys take advantage of Alexa or, Alexa is responding now in my office, and other IoT devices or smart TVs or smart fridges, right? We've seen those attacks already. You know, I think over time, this is also, as with anything, right? So there's a maturity of both the vendors and the consumers. So the vendors over time are, you know, increasingly putting more security controls and protocols into those IoT devices. And also on the flip side, it's also up to the consumers to know how to use and configure those devices correctly.
Okay. Now, what are your thoughts on artificial intelligence? As I've told you before the podcast, I just wrote a book on that. And AI is now becoming like the big, it was the big buzzword even before COVID hit, and now it seems starting to become more of a big buzzword. And when I did my book and when I did my research into it, there are not a lot of applications right now for an AI. The only use cases I've seen are, automating processes and threat hunting, penetration testing, helping filter for false positives, you know, for triaging of, you know, all these, so many thousands of alerts, warnings, messages, whatever. And it can be used to predict the future, you know, the future cybersecurity threat landscape. What are your thoughts on artificial intelligence? Have you seen our use cases? And do you have any plans to have Jupiter One make use of AI for your products and services?
I would say more along the lines of machine learning and not necessarily AI. I think AI is a kind of overloaded term, and it has kind of people, there's a lot of over-promising in terms of using AI. So a lot of vendors are using that as a catchy kind of next generation type of terms from a marketing perspective. So I'm more of a believer of doing the basics and doing it really well. So, and I also is a fundamental believer of arming the right people to make the right decisions, rather than trying to make the decisions for them. So that's why I say I lean a lot more towards leveraging machine learnings than purely AI, right? Because those are two different things. So with machine learning, I can totally see the applications in that, right? So you use that to detect anomalies, you use that to make recommendations, and so on and so forth. But then, you know, you arm the user, the security analyst, engineers, the CISOs, and so on, to make the best data-driven and informed, confident decisions based on that. So, you know, this is very much, you know, I'm going to go back to the physical and the biological world as well, right? Is I look at, you know, machine learning or kind of big data and data analytics, almost similar to things like, you know, DNA analysis or DNA sequencing, or, you know, those type of you know, machine learning analysis of mass number of cases, right? At the end of the day, none of that is going to be making a decision on an individual patient. It is still up to the doctor and the patient to make that decision, right? Mostly the doctor to make the recommendations. I look at it in the same way, right? So the security tooling needs to be that, and at least for now, no more than that. And we want to arm the doctors of the cyberspace, right? That's the security team, with as much accurate and kind of learned information as you can. They don't have to spend a tedious amount of time and going through days and weeks of effort to get to that information to help them to make that decision.
Now, finally, one other topic is that cybersecurity insurance policies. Have you ever had a client ask you about that? Because that's another big hot button topic right now, especially with COVID. A lot of companies, they want to make sure they're protected financially and so forth. Have you ever dealt with that topic recently or previously?
Yeah. So we've been asked a lot, right? So with our large clients to make sure that we have insurance coverage and cyber liability insurance and all that. So that's a given, right? So I think there's always going to be a need for insurance, and I think it's a good thing to have that, right? Because at the end of the day, we all make mistakes and things happen, and there's really no guarantee, right? And there's no absolute security. So I think we certainly every organization should be doing the best we can to cover all the bases, but definitely carry cyber liability insurance.
Okay. Now, what are your thoughts on the cybersecurity threat landscape in general? Now, I mean, obviously, as I've said, COVID's really changed a lot of things. What do you foresee the biggest threats and threat variants will be coming into this, as we wrap up the year and going into next year?
Yeah, and actually, this has a bit of a tie-in to what you were just asking about in the insurance. I actually believe that insurance, but cyber liability insurance is still a relatively new industry or new type of policies. And I think going forward, regardless of COVID or other things, and that actually is a strong driver to organizations becoming more secure, right? So I think fundamentally, most organizations, for them to start doing security, they have to have some external drivers. And one of them, so far, the driver, by and large, has been compliance, PCI and GDPR and so on and so forth. I think going forward, a lot of that, how you improve your security and how you practice your security, how you implement your controls, are going to be driven by the insurance companies and the policies, right? Because the better you do, the lower your premium is going to be, and that has a direct impact to your business, right, to dollars. So... and that actually is one thing that I believe will be continue to be a trend that we'll see more insurance policies drive better and stronger cyber practices in organizations.
Okay. Now, finally, as we wrap up our show, Erkan, what do you have a laundry list of items that you tell clients, your family, your best friends, how to protect themselves from a cyber attack? We all can become victims no matter how much walls of defense that we throw up, no matter how proactive we are.
Sure.
But maybe the question can be better phrased. What do you tell the people that you know of how to greatly mitigate that risk as much as possible? And if they are hit, what should they do?
Yeah, I would say really two things. One is common sense, right? So a lot of that is just common sense. I think it's just like you cross the street, you have to look left and right for oncoming traffic and those type of things. We just have to learn those type of common practices in cyber, right? So make those almost like muscle memories, and be careful with emails that you receive, and make sure that it looks not suspicious, and learn how to kind of spot suspicious emails and things like that. And on the other hand, all of the kind of consumer level cybersecurity and security protection softwares and capabilities are getting better and better. So I would say that, if you just kind of apply to more or less sort of those common sense and common practices, you're going to be fine. And on the other hand, at the end of the day, everybody gets hit, even I get hit, right? So by cyber events that are of no fault of your own, like a breach from Equifax and things like that, right? So I think at the end of the day, there is a lot of regulations and protections for those kind of things. I wouldn't be too worried and too concerned. It is a hassle, but as an industry, I do believe that we're getting better, right? So for at an organization level as well as a consumer protection level.
Okay. Now, Erkung, what's the best way for a new prospect or someone interested in learning more about your products and services or about your company? What's the best way for them to contact you?
Oh, just go to jupiteronE.com and sign up for a trial. It's as easy as that.
Okay.
Or if you have questions, just reach out to us from the website.
Okay. Well, Erkung, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. We appreciate it, and we look forward to having you on future shows.
Oh, this is great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Erkung. Have a great day. Take care.
Okay. All right. Bye.